This is the World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris. Even if you aren't familiar with the band Deep Sea Diver yet, it's possible you've heard frontwoman Jessica Dobson's work before. She spent time as the touring guitarist for lots of other bands, including Beck. Today, she'll explain how she got that job and what it was like, and we'll also dive into her experience making her new Deep Sea Diver album, Impossible Weight. Not only does she play a wicked guitar on this record, it's also the first album she's ever co-produced, which was a whole new adventure. My conversation with Jessica Dobson of Deep Sea Diver starts right after this live performance the band recorded for World Cafe. This is Impossible Weight. Performed live for World Cafe, that was Deep Sea Diver with Impossible Weight, the title track from their latest album. And today I'm joined by Jessica Dobson of Deep Sea Diver. Jessica, welcome to the World Cafe.
Thank you for having me. Hi.
Hi, it's so great to have you. We just heard Impossible Weight. Who are you singing to in that song?
I think predominantly my younger self, the one who grew up around Los Angeles and around the ins and outs of the record industry, kind of just the expectations I had in my head, either failed or not lived up to, you know, all those things. And then also to my current critic voice that I continually have to shut down. And I think that goes for most artists when you block out that critic voice and you have that freedom, that kind of childlike joy of creating. That is so much better than living, you know, with the voices that say, yeah, you probably shouldn't put that out, or like there are people better than you, whatever it is, you know, whatever you struggle with.
Yeah, I want to talk about that a little bit because your last Deep Sea Diver album before this one was 2016's Secrets. You went back into the studio to start working on this new music not too long after touring that album, and that was about 5 years ago. So what was your mindset when you re-entered the studio after Secrets?
Yeah, so I definitely had a little bit of a hiatus when we got back from touring on Secrets. It felt really good to go back into the studio, and I kind of went like a bull running into it and then realized the songs weren't there. Kind of lost a lot of confidence. I was also going through just a very big season of depression and anxiety, and I didn't really know where to place the feelings that I had. And so I kind of had to step back and ask myself, is this the way that I want to be doing music? How do I want to move forward? And like, what is like, and this is getting into like psychology, like what's the unearthed trauma here that I need to deal with too? And so, yeah, there was, just, I guess I'd never asked a lot of those questions.
Were there things that you tried inside the studio to like rediscover that joy or to find it again?
Yeah. For me, it was stepping further into producing. And actually, I really enjoyed the episode you did with Trina just
Trina
recently.
Shoemaker. Yeah.
It was fascinating. Like, and her love for gear and all the crap that she went through. Like, I'm surprised I hadn't heard of her, which is, I mean, part of the problem. Like,
yeah.
That new kind of ownership that I took on this record, which was, I have to admit, not one that I think I was prepared for, but it was Peter, my partner who plays drums in the band, who was just like, after a long dry spell of not writing anything and then him hearing some songs that I was playing downstairs, he came down and was like, you're producing this record. And I instantly started crying because I don't think I had the confidence at the time, but then I got really excited the next day. I was like, you're right. I've been doing it behind the scenes for so long, and I'm going to produce it. And I ended up bringing on my friend Andy Park to co-produce, and it was phenomenal. And there was a different collaborative spirit, I think, on this record too, and letting more people in, you know, even on the song we just heard, Impossible Weight, I co-wrote that. That was my very first co-write.
We're listening to your live performances today, but I'd love to play maybe a track or a clip from the album itself. Maybe you could choose a moment where the production for you was especially exciting.
I love the moment in where at the end of Eyes Are Red, it's like a 7-minute track, and we kind of go into this LCD sound system groove, hypnotic, krautrocky kind of thing. And then we slowly did in real time, we were playing all in the same room, the drums, bass, keys, and synthesizer got quieter and quieter and quieter to where you think the song is ending. And there was just the synths are just swirling around, and it's this crazy hypnotic thing. And then all of a sudden it builds back up and goes into this like wild My Bloody Valentine kind of rager. I think those kind of moments, they don't come out of nowhere. It's just like we've been playing together for a long time and we have that trust to be like, yeah, we can pull this off live. Let's do it.
This is World Cafe. That was a bit of Eyes Are Red. It's from Deep Sea Diver's latest album, Impossible Weight. I'm speaking with Jessica Dobson today on the World Cafe. I want to ask you about some of the things outside of the studio during the time you were making this record. Could you tell us about Aurora Commons, where you volunteered?
Yes. So I found out about the Aurora Commons probably 2016. I became friends with the founder of it. And what the Aurora Commons is it's pretty different than most of the services that I had seen around here where, you know, there's drop-in centers and a lot of social service providing places. But this place, it's kind of like a living room environment that's a kitchen that people who are unhoused or on the, you know, fringes could come in. You know, they did not have to be drug free, which is different than most places too. make themselves a meal, so they have ownership over that, do their own laundry, get social services that they need. I worked on Wednesday nights for a while with the women, and so a lot of them are sex workers, and they're just such, their needs are so present, like when they're coming in and they, you know, just beautiful human beings. And so there's this place really focused on respecting their humanity.
I mean, what kind of perspective did that volunteer work give you, you know, personally? We'll get into the songwriting thing in a second, but for yourself doing that, what did that give you?
Well, I think it's easy to live in your own head and to only deal with your own problems and become the center of your universe. And it's easy to hide behind, you know, the four walls that most of us have with a roof over our heads. These people don't have that luxury. And so you're kind of brought into the present moment of things. And I think often it's hard for us as a society to step into people's pain too, because either we make snap judgments about somebody or we think, oh, I don't have the same lived experience as them. And so therefore, who am I to bring myself into their situation or to share what my pain is? But what I found is they wouldn't shy away from, they want to hear about your life.
Yeah.
And I specifically remember one of my friends there that's just, I was telling them I was quitting smoking and they were so proud of me. And I was like, they're like, I don't know how you did it. And I was like, you quit heroin. I don't know how you did that. Like, just so insane. But you see the triumphs and the sorrows of, you know, I saw many people who I never saw again. They either passed away or got lost in the system. And it's just a really moving place. But yeah, I miss volunteering there because right now it's obviously because of COVID reasons, it's not functioning in the same manner. But
right,
it's a beautiful place.
We're going to hear you perform your song Switchblade next. And I know this was influenced by your work at the Commons.
Yeah.
Could you tell us how?
Yeah, it was a story that when I went to the very first benefit that I had heard, one of the people who then eventually started working at the Commons, she was living on the streets, and she basically kind of by chance on the day she was going to commit suicide, she walked in front of the Commons, and my friend who founded it was there, and she noticed that one of her shoes was broken, and she's like, hey, come, like, do you need anything? And I think the woman said, yeah, I need a new life. And she's like, well, I've got some shoes. Come on in. And then as she continued to unfold the story, I was just like, man, it's just these two people listening to each other. And we both carry pain. And so the switchblade has an importance because this is really crazy to me. When I wrote the song, I had no idea that the nickname, the street name for Aurora is the switchblade, which is kind of crazy.
That is really, what a weird... Yeah. Coincidence.
Yeah. Pretty wild. So, yeah, I like that. I know it's kind of a violent image or can be perceived as that, but it's like a balancing act walking on the switchblade.
That's such an amazing, like, synchronicity. Let's take a listen to the song. This is Switchblade, performed by Deep Sea Diver for World Cafe.
She was on the way to her apartment. Walking on the switchblade, both of us headed in the same direction. I could hear what she was saying. What do I get so down? Oh, I get so down.
Deep Sea Diver Switchblade, recorded live for the World Cafe. I'm Raina Duras, talking to Deep Sea Diver's Jessica Dobson today. Deep Sea Diver's new album is called Impossible Weight. We've talked a bit about the time between your last album in 2016 and this latest one. Since your last album, you also met your birth mother.
Mm-hmm.
How did you find her?
Wow, it's a really long story, but I guess the long story short would be I found her on Facebook, which is pretty wild. When I was adopted when I was younger, it was a private adoption, and so I only had like a first and last maiden name. And it was a very common Mexican name. And so I was just like, this is going to be hard to find this person. And so when I did find her eventually, in the most like miraculous way, it seems, I saw a picture and Peter was next to me and he was like, what? Because I was like, does this look like me? He was like, yeah, that's you. Like, because I saw a picture of her when she was a kid. And this is coming from somebody who I've never seen any photos, didn't know anything about her. And then all of a sudden, because maybe her lack of knowledge of Facebook privacy, I saw every photo and every
wow.
video. And I was just like, could hear her voice. And it was this crazy trip. And so I reached out. I was like, hey, I think you're my birth mom. I was born in Los Angeles. Is this you? And she was like, yep, that's me. Want to hang out?
So her reaction was like, it was positive.
It was positive, and there was a lot of pain that she needed to work through. Because I think, you know, when you give a kid up for adoptions, like, I think for most mothers, like, it's like a grievous experience, you know? And then you wonder, how is that kid doing? Did it do the right thing? And I think she carried a lot of shame with it. And then I told her, I was like, basically when we did meet in Long Beach in a park and I met my two brothers who are half siblings, it was just this wild experience where she was like, I thought you probably hated me. And I was like, quite the opposite. Like, I have sweet parents and I'm so grateful for the experience I had. But she's really funny, loves to cook. It's interesting what, you know, nature versus nurture gives. But yeah, that was a pretty sweet experience.
So how did meeting your birth mother affect you as a songwriter?
Well, I think it's probably more indirect in, you know, in my subconscious of like identity kind of, you know, when I was growing up, I had all these thoughts. I was very secure with, I love my parents, but it's just like, where do I belong? I didn't know what, you know, half of me was. I knew that I was half Mexican and I had a curiosity moving through life, but also a yearning to belong, you know, somewhere too. And so I think, you know, meeting my birth mom didn't like solve all these issues of like, now I know my identity, but it was just like, it's a step towards that. And like, I guess just confidence in oneself. And so I think having that piece solved was just like a little push in a good direction for me.
Yeah. Cause I can imagine that meeting a birth parent would give you answers about who you might be or where you belong, but it would also maybe raise more questions.
Totally. And, you know, there's still a missing piece. I don't know who my birth father is. I found out that I was half Jewish through 23andMe while I was going through the Taco Bell drive-thru. That was cool. Getting a bean cheese burrito, no onions, but...
Bean and cheese burrito is one of like the all-time good orders at Taco Bell, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I know. They'll never take that away. They take away so much stuff, but...
I'm speaking with Jessica Dobson from Deep Sea Diver today on World Cafe. Jessica, your partner, Peter Manson, is the drummer. He plays other instruments, too, for Deep Sea Diver. During the pandemic, you've been at home. You did some live streams. The next song that we're going to hear you perform came out back in April 2020, right after the lockdown started, before the album was released. What can you tell us about making Stop Pretending and how it helped you connect with the fans that you could not see in person on tour?
Yeah, that was still one of my favorite experiences of 2020. So, when we got back from tour the next day, that was when everything shut down. So we kind of were scrambling, like, you know, everyone started doing live streams and we asked ourselves, we waited a few weeks because first of all, when you get off tour, you just want to sleep for like a month. And I had no energy to like start doing live streams. And so it kind of actually gave us like a breath to like just sit back and ask, what is our version of a live stream? Basically, we started doing these weekly Sunday night shows, and the very first night we challenged, we called it Stay Home Stems. We were like, hey, Peter's going to record a beat live in our home studio right now. We're going to press record, and then we're going to upload it into the internet, and you guys take the beat and make your own song. Literally, there are zero rules. Reverse the beat, chop it up, like do whatever, rap over it. Don't care. Just go do something. And then we also challenged ourselves. Okay, like, I mean, it was just Peter and I because everyone was so separated. I was like, well, I'd better write a song too. So 2 days before it was due, I wrote Stop Pretending and mixed, engineered it, produced it, did everything in 24 hours. And then the next day we released it, which is crazy.
Yeah, to turn it around so quickly.
Yeah, but that's like, deadlines are an artist's best friend. And I learned once again, okay, like don't be too precious about things. And, you know, it's a song about the times, but it's not too on the nose. You know, it's like, I don't use words like lockdown or pandemic.
Coronavirus doesn't show up in the lyrics.
Yeah, it's like, it's kind of has this universal, like, resonance, I think, to it, you know, because something's always falling apart.
On World Cafe, this is Deep Sea Diver performing Stop Pretending. Deep Sea Diver with Stop Pretending live for the World Cafe. I am joined by Jessica Dobson of Deep Sea Diver today. In addition to your own solo work, you've also played guitar for a lot of other artists. We'll get to that in a couple minutes, but I want to know where it all started. I know you played piano as a kid, but when did you start playing guitar?
When I was 11, and my dad had a 12-string Takamine guitar, very 70s, and I have extremely small hands, and so it was, I think it was actually good that I learned on this huge guitar, because it just, like, gave dexterity, I guess, to my very tiny hands. And, yeah, like, you know, I learned, I grew up in the church, and so youth group was the place to play with other people. Yeah, I could actually play in a band environment. And so that's when I wanted to switch to electric. And my aunt was kind enough to, she came home with a gift for me from Guitar Center. It was like a Strat ripoff, an electric guitar and a solid state little Fender amp that had a push button so I could have distortion. And I just went wild. I was like, everything else kind of faded to the background. And I was like, yep, I'm playing electric guitar. Bye.
In your 20s, you were making your own music, but then you embarked on a pretty big adventure as the guitarist for Beck. Mm-hmm. How did that gig find you?
Well, I just so happened to be friends with the musical director at the time, and he had reached out to me. He'd come to a few of my shows. I was playing as a solo artist. He came to a couple shows, and then he said over email, hey, Beck's putting together a new band for the Modern Guilt tour. Whatever recommendations you have for guitar or bass drummer, send my way. So I sent him some names, and then I just had this weird, I was in this like kind of limbo between getting off of a major label and being pretty disillusioned, I guess, by the whole situation. So I was just kind of fumbling around, working at coffee shops, not focusing on my own music. And I just had this, I just thought it'd be fun to go audition, never thinking I would actually get it. I was up against a lot of session players in LA who were incredible. But I don't know. I just remember bringing, I had like a 64 Jaguar. It was my first like vintage electric guitar. And it became this initial talking point, I think, like with Brian and Beck. And they're like, oh, that's cool. And then I played the songs. And three auditions later, on my 22nd birthday, I was told that I got the gig.
What a birthday present.
Yep. Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, did you listen to Beck when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah. Loser was like one of the first songs I ever learned. And Devil's Haircut. So it's like, I already knew this songs, but obviously there are such nuances, and I grew in my understanding of pedals and different tones and guitars and amps. And so, but yeah, like he absolutely, you know, the golden age of the MTV era, he was a part of that.
Yeah. Like what Beck song was the most surreal to play on stage with him?
We ended up doing one of his, it was his biggest LA show at the time. We played with the Philharmonic at the Hollywood Bowl. So I grew up around Los Angeles. My parents were there. I remember walking out on stage and playing Loser and just seeing my family sing along at the top of their lungs. And they're also sitting next to like George Clooney, and there's Danger Mouse. There's someone from, well, you know, there's just all these crazy famous people in like the front of the pit. But anyways, like playing with the Philharmonic, Paper Tiger, that guitar riff, which I love that song so much, especially the bass too.
Yes.
I grew as a guitar player learning that song. And so that was very surreal to be on that stage doing that.
Okay, let's play a clip of Paper Tiger.
Oh, yeah.
No more ashes to ashes. No more cinders from the sky. And all the laws of creation I tell a dead man how to die. Oh, the deserts down below us and storms up above, like a stray dog gone.
Paper Tiger. This is World Cafe. I'm Raina, talking to Jessica Dobson today from Deep Sea Diver. The last song we're going to hear you perform today is called Wishing. I understand the idea for this song came from a Nina Simone documentary you watched. What was it about her story that sparked a song?
Yeah. So, you know, actually that song had been sitting around for like a year. And initially, the whole concept of wishing I was someone else. I mean, it came around at the time of like the Me Too movement when it was first coming out, Harvey Weinstein, and just the collective pain of women of like, we're still having to fight for these issues. We're still not being listened to. And I thought about all these people that I love that were in abusive situations. And I remember seeing the Nina Simone one. I was just like, man, even Nina was in this situation.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, even just like currently, like reading about like FKA Twigs, like it's still rampant. And like, you never know who's suffering, like, even though they might have this larger than life personality. And so it was kind of, yeah, helped me finish the song.
I really liked this thing you said when you were talking about wishing. You said, I have a tendency to try to resolve the narrative by the time I get to the end of the song. But for that one, I didn't, which felt right because that's what life is like.
Yeah.
Where do you think that impulse to try to resolve things comes from?
Ooh, I have a hard time. I wonder, you know, what kind of, if it's because I'm a Taurus, if it's because whatever personality types I have, Enneagram, whatever. I don't know. I always want to resolve things. I have a hard time living with just like, if I don't know how someone feels about me, I got to find out. Or like, you know, if I mess a situation up, I got to clean it up. But I've been trying to, I feel like I read, maybe it was something Tweety said, Jeff Tweety, like, yeah, I don't care about resolving songs because we want to tidy up and bow tie things. And like, but that isn't life. And we have to live in the mess sometimes. And so I was trying to push myself as a songwriter to not have to clean things up.
Let's listen to Wishing. It is Deep Sea Diver live for the World Cafe.
Not once you admit it, first once you deceive. My recollections are a one-way street. Slide into the morning. Somebody
You just heard Deep Sea Diver performing Wishing for the World Cafe, a song from their latest album, Impossible Weight. Deep Sea Diver's Jessica Dobson has been my guest today. It's been so nice talking to you, Jessica. Thank you.
So nice talking with you, Raina. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Raina Duras, back in a moment with more World Cafe.